Breakfast with Gary, Tim and Hamish.
Oh, hello, Homer. Hello, Gaz. Hello, Tim.
You ride your bike in?
No, Gary, because some...
No one's let the tyres down, have they?
Because some low individual pinched my headlight last night at Brewster's while I was getting my dinner.
Gee, yeah, that's a tragedy.
Where were you?
At Brewster's in Port Melbourne.
Getting your dinner?
Yeah.
And while you're in the shop getting your dinner, somebody took your light?
Yes.
Oh,
And they're about... you feel sort of defiled almost. I know that's probably a slight exaggeration.
Yeah, are you insured?
For a light. Yeah, but no, it's more the fact that people would do that.
Yeah, I know. There's some low lights out there. There really are.
So I got on
if you've got mixed light, if you're listening to the program, you've got mixed light, you bought it at a pub somewhere in Port Melbourne last night.
Give it back.
Belongs to Mick Sheen.
How much is it worth? $20?
80?
$80.
Yep.
Oh, it's worth more than the bike.
Your acting career's taken off. That was one of the better promos I've seen. You and Pang exchanging Brown and Taylor for the front bar and open mic.
Yeah, so I'm a late developer, Hammer, I reckon. I thought it was good. I looked back on it and I thought, if Cecil B. DeMille was still alive, he would have said, come on, son, come over to Hollywood.
You could have been a leading man in Hollywood. could have been.
They might get you for the footy show bar.
No, I don't think so, Gaz. I've done my part. The biggest surprise of the year was how patient Brian Taylor was.
Are you surprised by that?
He didn't abuse anyone. He didn't storm off. He did it all for an hour and a half.
Yeah, he's got that reputation of being one of the more patient people out there.
Yeah, we're a little bit behind. So we can talk about your bike and your acting career a little later on. You always lead with your big story. What caught your eye the most?
Well, the GWS Richmond game, I think, for obvious reasons, and it's more recent. But I must say, I think... the lid's coming off your old football club, Gaz.
The Demons?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think there's been a level of cynicism about them all the way through, led by you, Gary.
It's not cynicism.
Well, yes, it is.
It's not cynicism at all. It's well-based and well-founded.
Skepticism.
Yeah.
And doubt.
A need to be proven.
Yeah, and have they now proved themselves?
Yeah, I've been saying this. They've become much more trustworthy over the last month.
No, he's been saying that.
Has he? Okay.
No, he has been saying that.
And that's credit to them. And the team that we always compared them with have gone a bit going the other way. I mean, you can't trust St Kilda.
No,
St Kilda came out and blew the socks off Richmond and haven't looked like it since. So I think Simon Goodwin is doing a fantastic job with that group. But we'll talk about them in greater detail. But again, it makes a difference when Hogan and... Max Gawn come back into a side, when Jack Viney comes back into a side, when Salem's kicking the footy off half-back. So they were the ins.
That's true.
That's
and you're right. Except Port Adelaide, by their own admission, have no players missing. I mean, they've virtually gone through the season unscathed.
That's true. Two teams that came to the MCG on the weekend, the place where you have to get it done, were, and we said this Friday, there's the test. It is Port Adelaide v Melbourne at Saturday afternoon, and then the Giants v Richmond Sunday afternoon, and they both flunked.
Look, my faith in GWS is wavering just a fraction.
A fraction?
Uh-huh. I'm not sure they're now a lock for grand final day.
We're just playing the competition for someone else to play them. I hate to bring it up.
They get Coniglio back.
That was eons ago.
Is it going to make Coniglio make a difference?
Well, if Deledio can make a bigger difference than that. It's Jeremy Cameron.
And he'll come back as well this week. So they're probably
but
not...
It was, Tim, the problem for me concerning GWS was they were in charge in perfect conditions when things were going their way.
Then what happened?
When it got tough... When the heavy, dirty conditions came.
No. What happened first, though, was Richmond upped the ante, and they became a far more powerful, aggressive side around the contest. The Giants didn't want to play that.
No, they didn't. And certainly
forget about the rain. And the way they played in those wet conditions was appalling in terms of what they were trying to do on the field and still play in dry weather.
They should have been 5 goals up at quarter time.
They could have been. But they weren't answering the challenge.
Some of the great experts just at quarter time said that Richmond are a joke.
Yep.
Who could have fallen into Richmond? How could you possibly pick Richmond? Who was going down that path?
Are you looking at Tim?
I didn't say that.
No, what?
What did you say?
I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that. What I'm saying about... Let's talk about... Yes. Richmond have... They answered that challenge yesterday. And they were magnificent. I think the story, though, today is not so much about Richmond.
It is, but go on.
But it's about the Giants and what they're doing. Like their record now, in 6 weeks, They've drawn two games, but they've won one game in the last six in their last six games.
And they can't win at the MCG.
Well, they struggled at the MCG yesterday.
One out of ten means you can't.
Yeah, okay. Well, they struggle at the MCG, and we all know that that's where the finals are going to be played. So what does that say to them? What does that say about them as a team?
You know, we have a...
Hey, can I ask this question, though, about Leon Cameron? Like, last week, he was given an extension, a contract extension. He already had a... Which I didn't know at the time when I was asked the question, but he already had a year on a contract.
Jim, you're asking...
You often say this about coaching. Why do clubs fall into this?
There's no need for that. No one was going to poach Leon.
No.
Whether he's Jock McHale or not, no one was going to poach him. I can't understand why that happens.
So
here's more evidence to say you don't need to extend your coach.
Well, Dave Matthews talked about that the weekend, and he said it goes to the heart of stability for a football club.
And they're convinced. They're convinced in their own mind, rightly or wrongly, we don't have to be. They're convinced that he is the man to take them
forward.
Gary,
and they may well be right, but he wasn't going anywhere.
No, well, that might be... That might or might not be right. I tend to agree with you. And I'm big on this as well. I mean, this next 6 weeks may change how Leon is perceived. The summer months may change it, and 6 weeks into next season, there may be a whole different view on whether or not you commit to him long term.
Correct. But the more pressing thing, the more immediate thing is massive trouble, these blokes. Johnson, who we all know about.
Yeah.
Heath Shaw, who not everyone would agree on, and Mumford. Mumford's reputation has carried him through to this part of the season.
Yeah, no, you're right about
nowhere
that.
Near the player that he was
and
2 years
Shaw.
Ago. Yeah.
You think it may not go on?
Well, he's not playing. That's not the Heath Shaw that we've
seen.
No,
because Heath Shaw played an All-Australian year on his own terms last year.
And he can't find the footy now.
Talking about reputations, Toby Green's in hot water again. This is Leon Cameron on Toby Green post-match.
Yeah, well, you know,
Leon might have disappeared. Have we got the Leon audio? No,
we'll get it in a minute. But, I mean, Toby Green is the most prodigiously talented kid who has got half a brain.
You turned in the best forward in the competition last week.
Yeah, and their most valuable player.
Yeah, and okay, I don't back away from that.
What do you do with him this week?
Well, he's not going to play for two weeks.
No, but what do you do if you're Leon Cameron? Cameron, how do you handle him this week?
Well, let's just hear from Leon. A-Rod, our audio man's rebooted. Here's Leon.
I'll back Toby in, as I said, every day of the week, but I think the commentary out of that from me was he has to learn to deal with heightened situations in the game. And he's been better, but on today it reared its head and it shouldn't happen. What happens is it can cost you. It costs you dearly. He's worth spending time with because I know his heart's in the right spot, and that is he wants to play footy for this footy club from minute one to minute 120. But there's some areas in his game he needs to tidy up, and that's one of them. And we'll continue to work with him because I love the way he plays, but he's got to make sure he curbs that aggressive side when it comes his way.
Do you just revisit the psychologist? He's been working with a psychologist about his anger management.
Mate,
you just keep working with that.
To have that bloke playing footy week in, week out because he is that good. You throw your arms around him. You hope that some peer pressure is going to come to bear at somewhere along the way because the best sides, it is peer-driven, the pressure that comes on. Even from a coach point of view, it is when your peers look you in the eye and say, mate, you're letting us down. Bad.
That's not strong enough, Gary, from the coach.
What would you want
to hear? He may be stronger privately, one-on-one with him.
Yeah, he doesn't have to say publicly what he says.
No, but I think he softened the blow there. I mean, Toby Green is out of control. Toby Green does what Toby Green wants to do.
Not out of control.
No.
He's not out of control.
One of the TV stations last night showed his history.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Banging blokes.
He's not bashing
He's
blokes.
Inviting trouble.
Yeah, he is inviting trouble, but he's not out of control. I mean,
I think he is.
No, he's one of those guys who just suffers from white line fever or from a moment where he just can't control.
He's not the first guy to have white line fever.
No, but that's not out of control.
Well, I think he is. Oh, I reckon. I mean, it twice.
Okay.
Gone
so, what would you do with him if you were Leon Cameron?
Well, if he didn't get, I'd say to Toby, I'm going to drop you. I'm going to make an example of you. You can cuddle him as much as you like. He is no different now with his attitude than he was 3 years ago.
Well, I made a similar call on Bernie Vince last week. Bernie's at the other end of his career though, so he's at a stage where he should know better. But
so look, after two weeks suspended. Mike, you would drop him when he comes back.
Yeah, and I would say to him, he ran looking for trouble. This wasn't a spontaneous...
No, he didn't go looking for trouble. He went to fly the flag wrongly.
Fly the flag.
He went to fly the flag wrongly for Steve Johnson. in his own mind, Toby Green is a protector. He's I'm going to be
Toby
there.
Green is he?
Yeah, in his mind, right. I'm going to be. Don't hey, don't screw
was
your
he
face.
Floyd Mayweather is he?
Well, he didn't go and king hit him.
Well, hang on a sec.
By the way, I'm not defending the action.
Yes,
it
you
was,
are.
No, it was idiotic, absolutely idiotic, and he deserves to get whatever comes his way. But to suggest he's out of control, going around bopping.
Just one second. 9429 1116. If you've got a view on this, give us a call. 9429 1116.
You might think this is a long bow, but as soon as he did that yesterday, the bloke that I thought of was this prodigiously talented player called Phil Carman, who couldn't control himself on the football field.
He was headbutting umpires.
No, but yeah, he was. But before that, before he headbutted the umpire, he kept getting into trouble. He cost Collingwood a premiership because of his lack of discipline.
Now, that's true. All that is true. That's a history lesson, and that is true. So do you actually think, though...
Well, is that funny, is it?
No.
He said that's a history lesson.
No, but do you think Toby Green is Phil Carman?
I do think there are shades of Phil there. Yeah, I do. I have no compassion for Toby Green.
He's been at the Tigers for 4 years, headed up north to the Lions, and he's back now as the forwards coach. Morning to you, Lepper.
Morning, boys. How you doing?
Great to have you on. Just on the match against the Cats, what's a fair representation of Tigers fans at the Cattery?
Oh, geez, as many as we can fit in. Over 50% would be nice, Gaz, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be beautiful. I would have thought half and half, Lepper, personally.
Yeah, well, you should have tried playing for the Bears when they were trying to fill the crowd there a long time ago. So, yeah, no, as many as we can fit in, it'd be nice.
Are you enjoying being back in the epicentre of AFL footy, being in Melbourne, of course? You've had time elsewhere, but to come back and just live and breathe it like we do here in Melbourne town?
Oh, absolutely. What did you say, 4 degrees? Yeah, it's been terrific. I've really enjoyed it. Obviously, I'm a Melbourne boy. I grew up here and spent, most of my life here before I went up north, but really enjoying it and enjoying the time back at the Tigers again, and it's good we've had a bit of improvement this year.
I assume there's pros and cons being back in Melbourne. What are the pros of being out of the hysteria of Melbourne with footy, Lepper?
Well, there's quite a few, and that's probably the point. You're out of the hysteria. I mean, I remember being up there and some... A lady walked up to me and said, "Did you used to play for the Lions?" And I was actually coaching the team at the time. So they don't follow it as stringently as they do down in Victoria, that's for sure.
Hey, Lepper, I don't think it's any coincidence that you arrived back at the Tigers and their performance improves this year. Are you taking the credit for it?
Oh, look, I don't think so. I think it's a number of factors, really. And it's always hard in footy clubs to pinpoint why. I think a big part of it's the natural growth of the footy team, and there's some things Damien's done differently this year, some new coaches that's been added, a different game style we've put in place. So look, I don't think you can ever put one thing on why you get one big improvement to the other. And I think also the injuries last year compared to this year, our four best players haven't missed, so I think that's important as well.
Hey, Lepper, when you're watching them go around during the pre-season, you've been around footy a long time, you've played in successful teams and you've coached and you've been at Richmond before. Were you thinking, gee, there's something here with this group of players?
Look, I do know, but definitely with you look at Richmond's list and there's some really good top-end talent, and also there's a bit of a gap between some really good young talented kids. So it's always going to be for me about how quickly we can develop and bring on the likes of Castagna and Butler and Camden McIntosh and players like that to sort of take the next level, Brandon Ellis. So the improvement always comes from those type of players, and they're probably the unheralded ones, but they're the ones that are consistently doing their job every week and looking after the team. So I think it's a really good team-first balance at the footy club at the moment.
And just with that balance, Tim's been on this quite a bit through the course of the year. Fantastic what you're doing with the forward half setup and the way that that's been reset, restructured, the way they work hard. But do you need another taller marking option? I mean, can you go as far as you want to go with mainly Jack as your priority forward?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think we can go as far as we like this year. I don't think it's dependent on a one key forward, but you're right, as far as what everyone asked that question, but unfortunately you can only play what's on your list, and unless the AFL want to change the rules and give us an opportunity to recruit someone else in the back part of the year, that's not going to change. So we've been making do with what we've got and been going pretty well and actually turned it into a strength of our team. But you're right, every now and again on a last quarter wet day you'd like to kick it into a big beacon and take a nice contested mark. We're probably not getting that. We're more reliant on the ball hitting the deck and then those guys getting the work. So but it would be nice to take the odd contested mark down there a bit more often.
Hey, Lepper, we spent a lot of time talking about Dustin Martin and what he's going to do and whether he's going to stay and all that type of thing. How much time does it consume you and the other coaching staff having that discussion about Dusty?
I probably only consume this when other people talk about it, to be honest. It's quite a weird one, and Dusty's so much a part of the furniture, it'd feel strange if he actually left, to be honest, because it's not like he's got distant behaviour or anything like that, which I've seen quite a bit of with players and wanting to go home. In my time in Brisbane, I've seen a lot of the behaviour that sort of attaches with that, and he hasn't shown any of those signs. In fact, he's more entrenched in the team emotionally than ever. So it would be a surprise, but, you know, we live in a world of not just emotion, but money and other things that drive players. So we'll wait and see, but we're all hopeful he stays.
Hey, Leopard, what do you mean by distant behaviour? You know, the things that you saw about players that you started to form the opinion of that they were actually on their way out?
I mean, I think we know relationships well, and when you think, oh, this relationship's working or not working, or they're being distant and not so much giving everything they've got, I think we all sense what those little things are. And that's when the alarm bells start to ring, and whether it be things like they used to turn up and do extras a lot more than they used to, then they've dropped away a little bit, or they used to be more engaged in meetings than they used to be and they're not anymore. So all those little things you start to pick up on to think, geez, I think this person's starting to disengage a little, and none of that's been there with Dusty. So if anything, it's gone the opposite. So emotionally, he's invested in us, and let's hope that's the reason why he stays as much as any.
Justin, we're talking about whether or not $1 million, and this sounds ridiculous, is enough anymore to have a player stay. What does it mean when you have a player that you don't know about in terms of getting the list right for the following year? Does it affect more than you hope?
Yeah, obviously there's a follow-on effect. So, you know, you generally want your big players to sign first, and then you tend to know what's left over for the rest of them, don't you, as far as contracts go. So you like your big ones to fall first. And obviously Dusty not happening, you know, unless the club's at a point where they have to move forward and that's the final offer, which I have no idea is the case. They can start recontracting others, but often, yeah, you wait for the big dog and then the rest fall. So it does cause a hold-up at times within list management.
Leopard, you've been an assistant coach, you've sat in the big chair as the senior coach, and you're now back as the senior assistant coach. What's more enjoyable, and what do you want to ultimately be?
That's a good question, I guess. At this point in time, I'm loving living in the moment, to be perfectly honest. I think sometimes we've always lived in a world in the football industry with what do you want to be next is always the question, not what are you doing now and are you currently enjoying it? I've probably taken that approach, whereas I'm not going to put any stress on the next phase of my life and when that's going to be and what. Just live in the moment, enjoy what we're doing this year. I think that's the best way to take it. Who knows? I could be here at Richmond the next 20 years or only two. And you just never know in this game nowadays. But all you can do is give your very best from day to day and see what happens. I love my time as a senior coach. It didn't work, obviously, at that point in time. In Brisbane, whether I get that opportunity again, who knows? At this point in time, I probably wouldn't take an opportunity. It's been a bit too new, but you never know. What happens later on down the track.
Stands to reason you'd be better second time round, though.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've got probably a list of things a page long that you do differently already, and just being one year out of the game.
What's number one on the list, Leopard, do you think?
Well, most of it's about when to take control and when not to. Would probably be the big thing. And most of it, I think, now about with players and the kids nowadays, they like a relative amount of freedom in what they do. And I think I'd probably try to discipline too much with the younger group, that's for sure, the early days and try and straighten things up. Whereas I think at times the freedom, and I'm really enjoying that part of it this year under Damien, he's done that really well, the freedom in how the boys play, particularly offensively and with the ball, the players tend to like nowadays. I think that's the one thing that they tend to enjoy and thrive off. And also just make the game fun. I think that's the two main things, and take the stress away from the game, because it's stressful enough as it is. I think the young guys nowadays get it from every angle. They don't need it also from their senior coach.
Talking to Justin Leppich. And Leppich, you were with Damien Hardwick, you know, previously. You've come back after a couple of years. What have you noticed differently about him as a coach?
I think probably just that, Tim, that, you know, Damien was one that was, you know, very ABC. Not saying he's military in his approach, but he's very much like the American football coach in a lot of ways, the way he goes about it, and which is a fantastic way to be. But there's one thing he has done is been able to give the players back some of their head in what they do, and really trusted in them and trusted in our leaders. And I think he's getting some really good results. it's funny because at times you feel like you're not doing enough because you're not taking enough control and enough reins, but and he's handing a lot over. But he's done a good job just to do that and trust their boys that they can get, you know, get the job done, but also at the same time realise that defence is important and you have to put your head over the ball when it's your turn. And that's really been the basics of the game that has probably changed for the players this year, I think.
Justin, you talk about sort of people management, really, and how different is it managing an 18-year-old like Shea Bolton versus a 30-year-old? I mean, as a parent, each kid is different. I assume an 18-year-old is very different from a 30-year-old.
Oh, absolutely. It is the hardest. There's no doubt the hardest part, and it's probably the lessons I learned the hardest as a senior coach is what to say, when to say it, and know when to shut up and say nothing. It was interesting listening to Pat Rafter's interview the other day, and there was a sense of understanding when you've been a senior coach of that article about how, you know, at times you really struggle to get through to the next generation, and it's mainly due to the fact that you haven't lived their life and you're not quite sure on how to hit a particular topic. But we all want the same things. Pat Rafter wanted a well-disciplined, well-run group that he wanted to coach, but did it have to be done the same way as him, or did it have to be done a different way to get the players buy-in? And they're always your constant challenges, I think, as a coach, is not what you want out of it, but how do you actually do this with this current group?
It's great chat, Leppo. Just a quick one before we let you go, mate. Really appreciate your time. Basha, Hooley, I don't expect you to show your hand, but yeah, I want to know whether he's playing or not.
Basha will play. I think Damien even stated that after the game that he'll bring Basha straight back in, which gives us a selection headache already, which we'll go through this afternoon. But other than that, I'm not sure there'll be too many more changes, but I won't give any more than that away, guys.
Good on you, mate. Yeah, really appreciate it. A lot of love for you coming through off our SMS machine. There's no question that second time round, you and others would be much better at it, and I think you're going to get another crack. Thanks for your time this morning, mate.
No, thanks, guys. Thanks, boys.
Acting football operations boss has been listening to this drivel. Morning to you, Andrew Dillon.
Morning, Hamish.
How is the role acting football operations boss going? You've only been in it a week, but I'm told it's the most unpopular role in football because you can never get anything right.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there, Hamish. It's when you're dealing with sort of on-field matters and umpiring and match review panel, it's hard to keep everyone happy, but we've got a good team in the footy ops area at the AFL and they're doing a pretty good job.
Pretty tough circumstances to take over, Dills, if we can be serious for a moment. Simon there, who's a great friend and been around for a long time, and you two have a great history. That must have been a difficult time.
Yeah, Gary, you're not wrong there. I've known Simon for a long time, knew him before the AFL, playing footy together, so known him for over 20 years. A really, really tough time. But, I think it's something that's been played out publicly, and I think Simon, but also more particularly the family, I think, the less public comment, the better, and, just allow him to sort of deal with the things that he has to do on the family front.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Would you expect him to be back in footy next year?
Look, I wouldn't put a timeline on it, and I'm pretty sure he wouldn't. I expect if he wanted to come back to footy, I think there would be plenty of roles that would be suitable for him at the right time. But I think, I think there's probably other things that he's more focused on at the moment.
Andrew, you're the acting football operations boss. What was the first thing that landed on your desk yesterday morning?
Well, the first thing, we have a footy ops meeting, or it actually was more over the weekend, Tim. We had, at Cairns game, there was some issues with the lights in the first half, but, the team worked really well up there and averted any potential crisis. And then sort of Monday morning is when you sort of get into the match review panel. And, we've got a team of people who look at that. And then once they're finalised assessing all those incidents from the weekend, they sort of let me know what decisions they've made. So it's the MRP is normally the first thing up on a Monday.
So you get a call about the lights not working properly up there in Cairns. What they expect you to do? Go out there or something?
Yeah, I think it's more just a bit of a no surprises policy. So just so that you know what's going on. So I was watching the game. I couldn't tell watching it on the TV. So I think they did a good job keeping them all going.
Andrew, good morning. We're waiting to hear if the Brisbane Lions are going to challenge the ban given to Dane Zorko. Was he a victim of the new crackdown on punches? Because we've seen similar things go unpunished in the last few weeks.
Look, I'm not sure what the Lions are going to do. And so given that it's sort of still under assessment, I don't really want to comment on any individual case. But I think if you look at the ones that have come from the weekend, I think it's pretty clear that if you if you want to stay out of trouble, sort of use that in inverted commas, you're better off just don't punch him and you won't be in trouble. But I'm not sure you'd like to put it down to any sort of crackdown.
I'm not allowed to venture into this territory now, Andrew, so we'll leave it at that. AFLX was one of Simon Lethlean's babies. It had sort of gathered some momentum. Clubs were becoming more and more aware of it, and maybe with an introduction in the off-season. Where does that sit now?
Yeah, it's a good question. We've actually got a meeting with all of the general managers of football tomorrow, and we'll be running through a sort of an AFLX paper with them, amongst other things, and we're still hopeful that we can get enough interest from enough teams to be able to sort of make, it's not a final or finished product, but to be able to play something and allow the fans to come in and have a look at it and see some AFL-listed players playing the game and really get some feedback from fans in that week between the end of the home and away and the finals. But it's still a bit of a work in progress, and we'll get a good feel from the clubs tomorrow as to whether there's enough that'll put up their hands for us to put something on.
And Andrew, I read in the paper this morning, the Herald Sun, that Kevin Sheedy has visited the AFL regarding the idea that he has that the opening round of the AFL season should be played overseas at some stage. I'm not quite sure what the time frame is, maybe in the next 30 years. Were you part of that discussion with Sheeds, and what's your view?
I've had a lot of discussions with Sheeds over the years, but I wasn't in that discussion. Look, I think it may not happen necessarily I don't think it'll happen in my working lifetime, but I think it's something that, should be on the table, but I don't think it's something for the near future.
Rotations, Andrew, when do you discuss that? What's your general thoughts about it? Should the rotation numbers, if interchange rotations number be lessened? And when do you start to deal with that?
So that comes through the Laws of the Game Committee. And again, we've actually got a meeting on the Laws of the Game this week as well. So that'll be one of the agenda items. I'm not sure. I don't have a firm view on it either way. I suppose the only thing I would say is I think the game's in pretty good health at the moment. So my initial position would be that you wouldn't be looking to make sort of any wholesale changes anywhere, because I think the game's been played pretty well and we've got an unbelievably close season this year and some unbelievably close games every week.
Andrew, the Herald Sun has a story by Sam Landsberger today saying that the AFL is still considering a radical fixture shake-up for next season. Would you anticipate that it would still be the season next year that it is this year, fixture-wise?
Sam, I couldn't put a time on that. It's something that's been under discussion for a couple of years. And the thought for that is to try and keep the interest in the season for as long as we can. Now, obviously, this season is one that's maybe a bit different from ones that we've had previously. And it looks like the final eight in every position in the final eight will go right down to the wire. I think it's sort of the role for the AFL to continue to look at alternatives. But whether it would happen next year or into the future, I think that's something that's still got a fair bit of work in it, to be honest.
So just to be clear on that, the teams like North Melbourne, Brisbane, Carlton, Gold Coast now, their season's almost over. You're saying the AFL wants to get rid of or minimise the amount of dead games, for want of a better term?
Well, I think that's the thought. It's just working out. And that's one of the hardest things. I think if you've seen the different alternatives that have been put up, the hardest thing is how do you, if you split the comp into three different sixes, how do you make the teams down the bottom actually have meaningful games in the run home? Mm. And that's always been the hardest thing to work through when looking at an alternative fixture model.
Talking to the acting football operations boss of the AFL, Andrew Dillon. And Andrew, yesterday the conversation came on the back of an article written by Greg Denham in The Australian that there's a bit of a sniff about the way that North Melbourne are going about things in the latter part of this season, and that ugly word tanking was mentioned there somewhere. Has there been enough happen that it's raised the eyebrows of anyone at the AFL, and have you been moved to have a discussion at all with North Melbourne about this?
No, I was quite surprised with the article. I was actually at the Essendon North game, and I was actually there. I knew that Tarrant had pulled out, and he did have a bad back. So, it's not something that's come across my desk. It's not something that's come across my desk.
Two part question, Andrew, if I could. Firstly, round 23. When do you make an announcement on the timings of them? And then, in terms of finals, do Giants and Cats get to have home finals? And who makes that call?
So on the first part, Hamish, we'd be hoping to make at the latest the call after round 20. So that's not the end of this round, but the one after. In terms of the finals, It's the AFL that sets the fixture, and we've got some contractual obligations, and so we sort of have to obviously fulfil them first, and then we look at making sure that we can schedule the finals where we can get the best crowd, and that's sort of normally the number one way we do it.
And as we let you go, Dills, Gil got his feet back under the desk. It was a tough finish to that week, of course. How's he holding up?
No, he's going a lot. I had a good chat with him last night, and he's back firing. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up with him.
Dills, thanks for your time. Good luck acting in a tough old role, and hopefully it's a better month or two for the AFL.
Thanks, Hamish, Gary, Tim, Sam. Speak to you later.
Andrew Dillon, who's the new acting general manager for the operations.
A couple of years at the Crows and then a heap of grand finals for the Hawks, three premierships. We've known him for a long time as a man very reliable in front of goal, but on the weekend, Jack Gunston went back to halfback and dominated. Morning to you, Jack.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, tell us this, Jack. You've got Gary, Tim and Hamish. On the list of hotheads at Hawthorn, where does James Sicily rank?
Yeah, he's right up there. He plays the game on the edge, or probably lives the life on the edge, I think, a little bit. But no, it was good to see a bit of passion from him on the weekend, and we want him to keep bringing that.
Hey, Jack, well done to you and to your grand football club who, you know, after six, seven, eight rounds looked like it was going to be in for a pretty tough year, and even your own form, and both of you have turned it around in your pretty spectacular style, and you found life as a halfback agrees with you.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where they say don't play too well, you might be stuck down there. But no, it has been good. It's been a big change, and I guess 3 weeks ago I probably didn't see myself going to halfback and playing this role with, I guess, the young guys that were down there playing good footy, and Grant Birchall was back, but then obviously Birch got injured. So, Clarko, yes, threw the magnets around as he's done all year, and it's been good so far, and it's a different role, but, the boys are playing some good footy, and it's definitely a big change from the start of the year.
You flirted with it. You played on the wing, and you go back behind the footy when the need arises, but they're now playing there permanently. Is it easier than playing forward?
No, it's definitely not. It's not easier. It's
turn it up, Jack. Come on.
It's got its challenges. No, I definitely say it helps. I get a greater appreciation for the work done up the field when they can slow the ball movement down, that's for sure. But they've both got their different challenges.
Can we then read into this that Clarko puts a higher emphasis on the work of the defensive players as opposed to the work of the forwards?
It's probably more, there's a bigger focus on the defensive structure, I think. And I guess around the ball and sort of on the half back line, I think there's a big focus of let's win the ball there and make sure we can get our hands on the footy there, and then we can build it up. And I guess, as you see, we're not starting huge numbers forward of the ball, so we just want to get our hands on the ball first to then take it forward in a composed manner.
Just on the restructuring of the side and seemingly mid-season, in your view, what makes Clarko as superb as he is as a coach?
I think just his ability to change. He's always one to think ahead of the game. I think over the pre-season and off-season, he's always thinking. He never has the chance to switch off. And but now, this is probably the first time I've seen in his coaching career that I've been there, that his ability to just put the brakes on things and really assess what's going on and what needs change and where we can do that. And I guess injuries have forced our hand with a lot of young guys coming through, and I guess a different chemistry that's building through the team. But his ability to change mid-season and tweak things has really paid dividends.
And we know he's one of the most innovative coaches. He introduced the unsociable Hawks, where you're unsociable against other teams. Now you're unsociable with yourselves out there as well, which is a new dimension that you're bringing to the game. Dorea and Sicily at the weekend. How did you read that, Jack?
Yeah, as I said, I love the passion and I love the intent of the boys to deliver feedback there and then. There's probably the aspect where you can maybe just go a little bit too far, and we probably don't want to see that every week, but we love the fact that, there's feedback straight away and situations can be dealt with there and then.
Sean Burgoyne play next year?
I hope so. I actually asked him the other day.
What did he say?
He didn't give me an answer. He just laughed. But he always does. No one's sure, and if I ask him a question, he'll talk for 10 minutes. So he's playing great footy, and I'd see no reason why he wouldn't go again.
When was the last time the Hawks had an Irish cult figure?
I think that was the first Irish guy to play for Hawthorne. I could be wrong, but
what about Dermot? What about Dermot O'Brien?
Jordan O'Roughhead.
He was great on the weekend, kind of vast. He played some good footy in the VFL, and he's developing really quick, and he's got great touch with both feet, and he's got a good game sense, so hopefully we can get a few more games into him.
What sort of a bloke is he, Jack Gunston?
Yeah, he's a Guinness drinking, the typical Irish, and as you said before, Ruffy loves him. He loves anyone that's of a different culture or has different interests to him, so Ruffy, pretty much thinks he's Irish with a... can drink Guinness as well with the boys.
I'm not sure you'd have much in common with him, Jackie boy. I'm not sure he's moving your circle.
He loves a nightclub every now and then, doesn't he?
Hey, what about Bradley Hill? We had a little love-in after the game.
Yeah, no, he could say he's a bit emotional. He loved the boys, and it was a really big decision for him moving across. And I guess winning 3 flags and having special ties and bonds with the boys, it was obviously a big moment for him coming against his old side.
Well, was it as simple as that? He was just emotional playing against his old side?
Oh, I think it was. He's an emotional beast, Billy. He's a character of, I guess, any footy club. And I think it was just the fact coming up against some close mates and where he sort of grew up with playing his footy. I think... he loved the Hawthorne Footy Club that much, but he had strong ties back to his family and wanted to play footy with his brother. That probably drew his hand.
Hey, Jack, we're seeing more nude pictures of the Shark these days than we are of Jager O'Meara. When's he going to be back on track?
I think he's training really well and he's getting some full sessions in now. So I think it's about 2 to 3 weeks away that hopefully Jags is back playing.
Hey, Jack, when you do interviews, what's it like when you get asked the same question twice? Come on, Wispy.
Hey, Jack, I apologise. I had to step out and take a very important call, so I actually missed that question, but I believe you answered my question in a lot more detail than Hammers.
I gave it a bit more, but it's easy for me. I can just repeat myself.
I haven't got Tourette's.
How is the mood at the moment at Hawthorne? Slow start, building now. You're not going to, unless something remarkable happens, play finals, but is it... a time of excitement given what may happen in 18 and 19?
Absolutely. There's a big element of excitement, as I said, with the younger guys coming through and the way we're playing footy, it's such a drastic change to how we started this year. And I guess walking into a footy club after a win, there's always smiles and a lot more enjoyment around the place. But, it's really exciting to see what we can build in maybe the end of this year, but also the following years.
Hey, we've only got 40 seconds before we've got to take a break, but I've sat next to your old man on a plane a few times going to Hawthorne games. He is a very anxious and nervous watcher. He reckons he does laps of the stadium. Is that right?
He does. I never have to get him a ticket for a seat. He walks and covers a few Ks around the ground. I think he likes his own space and doesn't really want to listen to anyone.
Jack, thank you for your time this morning. Good luck on the weekend.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
There was a great game at Etihad Stadium yesterday, Hammer.
And Jordan Dugowie kicked 4 goals. He had a tough start to the year. Yesterday, there were 2 men down. Darcy Moore went to hospital. Trav Varko, he was out for most of the game. No Scott Pendlebury. A couple of youngsters stepped up. Jordan Dugowie was one of those. Morning to you, Jordan. Congratulations on yesterday, one of your best career performances, and I assume one of the best the club's been involved in since you've been there.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Obviously it was a fantastic win. So, like your boy said, a disappointing start to the year, but it's good to finally get going.
Don't like talking about yourself as a rule as a footballer in 2017, but from an individual standpoint, have you played better for the Magpies?
I think so. I'm just trying to build that consistency, to be honest. It's a tough game, AFL, and some of the players that are elite at it play consistently throughout the year, so that's just what I'm trying to build at the moment.
Jordan, you're a star, and I preface this question by saying it, but I believe that. I think you've got amazing talent. Do you feel any guilt about the fact that you and Wellesley and Jamie Elliott weren't there at the start of the year and yours was self-inflicted?
Thanks, Mike. 100%. Obviously, like you said, really disappointing start to the year. Pretty much let everyone around me down. So, like I said earlier on in the year, I just put my head down and focus on trying to play good football and play the faith. But it's going to take time. But with me, Wellesley and Jamie out, it obviously was really disappointing for the team and probably cost us in a way. So, overall, very disappointing.
the win-loss record with Wellesley in is amazing, isn't it, compared with when he's not. We all know, we all admire his talent. What else does he bring to the group?
Oh, he's just a fantastic bloke, to be honest. Especially when you see him out on the field, his leadership's outstanding. So I think he's taken that to a new level since coming to the club. But just his overall aura around the club, just trying to get teach the young boys lots of things. And he's been really good for my development, that's for sure.
And the development's really good, Jordan. Well done on your performance after a tough early start to the year, self-inflicted, of course. What I really liked most was the support that's been for Nathan Buckley from the Collingwood players has been almost unanimous, and it's been pretty loudly proclaimed, that Treloar. Yourself, Jordan, and Taylor Adams have been really strong. When that game was in the on the line in the balance, it was those blokes who then backed up their talk with actions. Adams was the tackle that ended up leading to the goal for Jordan. I mean, so in terms, it's going to make it a really complicated situation, Jordan. It might not be in your head about whether you re-sign Nathan Buckley, but for... Yeah, a week ago he was gone for all money. Keep playing like that, it's going to be a hard decision.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think that was the part all the players were really frustrated about earlier on in the year. Like, being a head coach is a pretty tough gig, and when your players aren't performing, there's not much really you can do. So, like you said, Adams was really instrumental throughout the game. So it was just good to show that never-die attitude and really fight the game out like we did.
What about the fact that Pendlebury wasn't there? Does that then, you guys look around at each other and go, righto, we've got to step up and carry some of this load?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a massive hole to fill. Like, we've played a couple hundred games, so that couple hundred games experience is taken away. But, like I said, the acting captain, Steele Sidebottom, he was fantastic. He just took his leadership to another level and really just met the younger boys like me, and a few others. We just had to really put our hand up and lead from the front, which I think most of us did, which was good.
And Jordan, how did your role change yesterday with the injuries to Darcy Moore and also to Trav Varko?
At the start of the game, I was sort of a little bit of mid-forward rotation, and then when Darcy went down, we sort of needed another target, another forward. So I pretty much just held forward, and we sort of just changed the game plan around it just to allow for only one tall with Reedy and the rest being small.
Jordan, when Elliot Yeo was storming into goal and looked like he couldn't miss, did you think you were done? Do you think that would have been it?
Yeah, I was actually on the bench at the time, and I tell you what, I was pretty lucky. Put it down and then they get a couple goals ahead, but when it hit the post, I think the spirits raised of everyone in the team.
Talking to Jordan Ngoi, who kicked 4-2 yesterday afternoon. The latest, if you could, on Trav Varko on Darcy Moore, Jordan?
Yeah, I think Ars is all good. I think he's just hurt he's got a sore neck, so I think that's all fine. But I think Varks, I think he dislocated his shoulder and knocked himself out, so I think that might be done for him.
And what about Bucks? I saw some vision as I was leaving the commentary box yesterday. Bucks grabbed a lot of the players together and seemingly spoke at length. Can you give us any insight into Bucks post-match?
Yeah, he was just really proud of our performance. He was just saying how good it was to see us put in a full quarter performance, and when we really needed to do work, we did. So I think that's what he was most happy about.
Jordan, well done yesterday. Fabulous performance. Good luck for the rest of the year. You got the Crows at the G next Sunday.
Beautiful. Thanks for that.
Weird AFL injuries, and we're going to whip through because we've got 10 today, and after last week's vicious feedback, I'm kind of on my A game today. And then this is off the back of Neville Jeddah, who rolled his ankle, he stepped on a football. So that wasn't good enough to make the top 10, but it did get the juices flowing. So at number 10, Roger Merritt, who was working at a steelworks, and melted steel just poured into the back of his boot. Now, the legend has, I don't think Roger missed too much footy, but it did melt off quite a chunk of his foot.
And he got the best pair of orthotics, and he's still got them to this day.
So melted steel in the boot, that's, we can avoid that one.
Do you reckon that would be on the team list, melted steel in the boot?
He didn't miss a game.
That's amazing.
Really? Tough.
Number 9 was the recent news of Dane Rampey tripped over the fence, broke his arm. So that's a bit of fresh news. Number 8 was Sherrod Wellingham ripped his ankle to pieces whilst jumping on a trampoline, which, it's just not going to fly at the workplace, jumping on the trampoline.
Wellingham!
Scotty Thompson, North Melbourne's Scotty Thompson, not the Adelaide Scotty Thompson. Scotty had surgery on his adductor.
He got home from surgery. His dog had vomited on the floor, and he put his foot down, slipped in his dog vomit, and undid some of the good work of the surgery. So that's at number 7. So this is this is the wealth of sort of supplies that we've got on offer. Number 6 now, Zach Clark. He tweaked his knee a decent sort of strain at a music festival, and I bumped him up to 6 because poor old Zach would have had to put the call into Chris Bond or Ross Lyon to explain that he'd hurt himself at a music festival. That in itself would cause some sort of psychological damage.
That would cause another injury.
Did he ring himself or did one of the other players dob him in?
I reckon you just send a text through to Ross. Okay. I don't know if you want to go voice to voice straight off the bat. Number 5, Stevie J. Stevie J, who's been in many a list, but he gets in. He's double-dipped his chip because... Remember, he jumped the Torquay pub fence and smashed his ankle.
Yep.
And then just recently, he was reaching into a bag to pick up his phone and he hurt his finger, which sort of raised a few eyebrows at the time. And even after some time, it's still...
Was there a crayfish in his bag, was it?
We never quite got to the bottom of that. Number 4, I really like this one. I like the sort of simplicity of Levi Greenwood... He tripped on his own tracksuit pants. He got stuck in his own tracksuit
pants,
which can happen.
My word, it can.
Which can happen, and he went down the stairs and broke a toe. So on his own tracksuit pants. So we can put a question mark around that one for
That's
Levi.
That's a great visual. That is a good.
We've all probably done something close to that.
Yep.
Number 3 was Jared Grant, my old teammate at the Bulldogs. He stepped on a stingray out in the Port Melbourne. So that was put him out for a little. Old spindle shanks. The old shanks just stepped on a stingray, and he played for the Dandenong Stingrays growing up, which is a useless anecdote. Number 2, this one's close to all Bulldog hearts, and I really don't want to upset the perpetrator, but poor old Brad Johnson, at the age of 34, and he was nursing a bit of tendonitis in the Achilles, and he didn't realise that the golf cart behind him was just moving. So poor old Noel, who was driving the golf cart, drove straight into him. And by all reports, the accuracy with which the golf cart landed on the Achilles tendon was quite impressive.
How is Noel? I'm not worried about Jono. How's Noel?
Noel didn't take it. He was a bit upset, Noel.
Yeah,
to be fair.
He's recovered, though.
Yeah, he's recovered.
He got out of the home last week, Noel.
Did he? How many games did Noel miss?
You missed a couple. Jono missed a couple. He missed a couple. But number 1, again, this is for 2. He got 2, and it includes one of my favourite word in the English language. But Brad Ottens, he double dipped as well. He hurt his hand on a propeller while water skiing up on the river. But more impressively, he fell off his ladder in the backyard and impaled himself on a garden stake.
Oh.
So is stake your favourite word or impaled?
Impaled is my favourite. Really, really takes you there, I think, impaled. So number 1 is Brad Ottens.
So he turned up to train like a kebab, did he?
Right, he's skewered.
Breakfast with Gary, Tim and Hamish. Weekdays from 6 on 1116 SEN.
North Melbourne have been a talking point for the last couple of weeks, and their coach has been good enough to join us on the line, Brad Scott. Good morning, Brad.
Morning, Sam. Morning, boys.
Brad, let's start on a slightly lighter note. The vision between you and Magic Door has been replayed several times over the last week. It's been talked about as one of the all-time great sprays. Is it your best ever, or have you had better ones that just haven't been captured on the screen?
Oh, I think it's pretty rare. I think that's probably why it's been replayed a fair bit. Yeah, it's pretty unusual to feel the need to do that. But, yeah, I don't rank them. I've probably copped a lot better in my time than I've given out, that's for sure.
You got to, and clearly he's able to cop a spray too, Bradley, I suppose. That's the next thing.
Oh, that's the most important thing to understand as a coach is what players can, I suppose, tolerate in one way, but also what gets them up. There are certain players that you know that respond to that and other players that would be certainly demoralised by that. So understanding your players, understanding each one individually is key.
And the other thing that's talked about, which is a pain in the neck for you to have to even address, I would imagine, but is this whole tanking debate. And I think I've heard you say, or you've certainly been quoted as saying, you may have had only 5 available in the VFL on the weekend to pick from, which gives you limits your options a bit.
Yeah, we're even at the point where we named Lockie Hansen in our emergencies last week, and he was undergoing a fitness test to even play and didn't get up to play in the VFL. So when Robbie Tarrant went down late before the game, our options were pretty bare. So Josh Williams came in and made his debut and had 15 possessions and kicked the goal. So I thought he was very good on debut. But you know, it's fair to say, yeah, we were scraping the barrel.
Hey, Brad, good morning to you. It's Tim here. Goldstein not back in the side. Proust in the side. First of all, where is Goldstein with his football right now, do you believe?
Oh, he's fighting his way back to his best form. And he's, by his own admission, he's not anywhere near that at the moment. And we had a really good discussion yesterday about the fact that, look, we tried a lot of different things and, you know, he's still been struggling and gone back to the VFL, but really didn't go back to the VFL and basically forced the match committee to bring him back. So I simply said, mate, we can't bring you back on the back of that performance. So you need to go back again at Werribee and demand selection, because Braden Proust is now available after being unavailable for a few weeks, so he gets his opportunity, and my genuine hope is that Majak and Prusy play really well this week, and then Goldie dominates the VFL, and we have a really tough decision next week.
With Goldstein, is it form, is it injury, is it confidence, or is it just a combination of those three things?
Well, it's not injury. He certainly carried some injury in the second half of last year, but this year he's over those, and look, I think for any big guy, it's a pretty fine line between playing pretty well, getting your hand to the ball by an inch or so, and not. And Goldie's just at that point where, you know, he's always been a dominant ruckman, but around the ground he's been pretty hard to combat. And he's just not getting himself in the position to get the ball enough around the ground. So that's something we're working with him on. And when he's around the ball, he's okay. But he just needs to get himself into position to do that a little bit more.
I love Proust as a big guy with presence. You know, like to me, it's not so much about, you know, the disposals and the stats. It's what he actually can do around stoppages. Do you see him developing even further than where he is right now? And how far do you think he might be able to go as a big man in this game?
Yeah, look, I agree. I mean, Proust and Goldstein are fairly unique in their own ways. I mean, Goldie's... People have accused Goldie of not being aggressive enough, but even if you go back to Goldie's All-Australian year, he's never been a ruckman like Braden is, and that never a ruckman that throws his weight around. He's always been a class act, whereas Braden does have an aggressive streak, and he does like to throw his weight around, and I think we've scratched the surface with him. We're really annoyed, no more so than he was, to lose him to injury about a month ago. So... yeah, I think there's a lot of upside for Braden. He's working really hard all the time, and his rate of development in the last 12 months has been nothing short of sensational. So, you know, we'd love it if he keeps on that upward trajectory, but, yeah, we think he's going to improve. How much is, you know, still up in the air at the moment.
Brad, where do you sit on the draft? take North Melbourne and the talk that's been going on for last week to one side. We had Chris Connolly on earlier who said there absolutely needs to be a lottery in the bottom 10 sides when it comes to the draft. Do we need that, or do we actually need to make sure that the team that is finishing at the bottom gets access to the best talent coming through?
Oh, look, in our personal situation, Sam, I would like a lottery this year because, you know, we intend to win the next five games. I mean, that's our target. So if we get rewarded for winning those games in a lottery situation, that's great. But personally, I don't think we need it. I think that if you're tempted to even think about managing your list to influence draft position, then that leaves more scars on your football club than potential upside from a draft pick, you know, one or two positions better. So I personally don't think we need it, but, you know, with all the conversation around it, you know, maybe the AFL in the long term think, you know, let's just remove any discussion so that we're not talking about it. But I think the talk, as I said yesterday in my press conference, is where we're concerned, I think it's laughable. You know, I felt like putting our doctor up in the press conference yesterday and getting him to answer the questions as to who we had available and who we didn't. But no, so my personal view is no, but I can understand why people are talking about a lottery.
Talking to North Melbourne coach Brad Scott, Gary and I had a conversation about Taylor Garner a couple of days ago off air, Brad, about the potential of this particular player. He's not there yet. What do you think that he needs to do to get to that next level? Because he shows the potential to be like one of the super players of the competition.
Yeah, he's that sort of X-factor player, Tim. He's. I mean, the short answer to your question is play more than nine games in a row. Yep. I mean, that's been the challenge, getting Taylor actually out on the field. And he's currently at nine games in a row, so he's at his longest consecutive streak in his career so far. So, you know, and we saw what he can do last week. It was probably his best game of his career so far. And he's, again, like scratching the surface in terms of his capability, because he's got X factor, he's got, you know, he's a good size, he's really aggressive, really strong overhead. So, you know, he's a pretty complete player in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think he's the type of player that every coach loves, because he's a bit of a barometer for your team.
Morning, Brad. Hamish here. We read yesterday Dustin Martin, $6 million, 6 years, and then we all sort of started thinking, what is a Godfather offer these days? What in your view, is a huge offer for a player? Is it more than $1 million a season?
Oh, well, to be honest, you'd have to talk to our list managers about that. I don't get too involved in the financial side of things. I get more involved in just the type of player that we'd like, and more the tenure, because, you know, how does that fit into the other players that we've got? But look, I know that, you know, you look back over history and, you know, way back to Alistair Lynch signing a 10-year, $2 million deal, and it was just considered obscene back then. And Lynchy was actually underpaid for the last 3 years of that contract back then, because the average wage went up so much. So, yeah, I think, you know, personally, I'd like to see list sizes come down a little bit so that the best players get paid, you know, what they deserve due to their impact on the game. So, yeah, I think very quickly it's going to become the norm where, you know, at least the best two players in your club are being paid around that mark. So it's difficult to project, but your brother Hamish keeps telling us that there's no money in the game, but
he's a deal.
That keeps going up.
He's a deal.
So what is the right number on a list, Brad? Sorry to cut you off. What's the perfect ideal number for a list size?
Well, I think it flows down. There's already been an announcement yesterday that the VFL will scrap the development league next year. So basically there's only the VFL competition next year. So already the players who don't play in the VFL are going to have to go back and play at local clubs. So the important thing is that if list sizes come down, then, you know, where do you get your top-up players from if you have an injury run such as we've got at the moment? So we need to sort out the second tier first. But once we've got that sorted out, I think, you know, a full-time playing list of around 30 with a fairly lengthy top-up list would allow more money for the absolute elite players in the game. And then it would allow a significant opportunity for those in the second tier, if they're playing well enough, to get elevated onto a senior list in season and potentially play AFL footy.
Hey, Brad, you mentioned about the list manager and recruiting, and you don't get involved in that area then, but your club has been linked to so many different players in recent time. At what stage would you want to sit down and eyeball somebody like a Josh Kelly or a Dustin Martin if they were coming to your club?
It's probably more up to the players involved and how comfortable they feel. I mean, we're really conscious to be respectful of players that are currently contracted to other clubs. But, I mean, there becomes a reality at some point that if a player is going to think about moving clubs, they personally want to meet the coach. They want to get an understanding of where the club's headed, all those sorts of things. So it's not. I'm a lot more flexible and probably open to what the player himself wants to do. And you know, if that means that it's October, that's fine.
Brad, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it, and good luck tomorrow in Tassie.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
On you, Brad.
That is tonight's opening monologue.
Serious stuff this morning. Definition of tanking is giving up, throwing a match away, losing intentionally, or not competing. North Melbourne has done none of those things this season. They haven't won a match since their season has been off track for most of the year. But any forensic examination, they are in a phase of rebuilding. That's what they're doing. They are not in a finals window period. Rebuilding involves playing some youngsters before they're ready, either physically or mentally. It leads to inconsistent performance. Like all teams, they still suffer from loss of confidence, injury, suspension, the effects on the team. It's no secret that teams that are generally near the top of the ladder experience less of each. That's my humble observation. North could not have tried any harder last weekend against Essendon. Yes, they collapsed in the last quarter, but they also lost their best player, Robbie Tarrant, in the warm-up. Jack Zeeble, the skipper, was spelled, managed, that's the modern vernacular. Talk to anyone at North and they will tell you that he is hurting and needed a break. The Roos had a real crack. With five rounds to go and no chance of making the finals, expect more experimentation too from teams like North Melbourne. That's what you do when you're building for the future. Some players may even get a farewell game when they don't expect it. That's what you do when you can't make the finals. It's not tanking though. It's planning. It's preparation. Taking a broader view of your club. Surely that's what fans of teams like North Melbourne expect. Let's not allow ourselves to slide into this laughable tanking conversation. Timothy, thanks for listening.
You know, one sense you could get really offended because it does question your integrity to an extent. But it's just been so far removed from the fact that, you know, I don't want to engage too much in it. I mean, we want to win.
Chris Connolly is on the line. He played 84 games for the Melbourne Football Club. He's a life member of that club. He coached the Dockers from 2002 to 2007. He was a central figure in the AFL's 2013 investigation into allegations of the Demons tanked. He is listening this morning on the line. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, boys.
Did that?
You've stolen all my thunder now.
Did that resonate with you?
What? Well, you were spot on. Absolutely spot on. I can give examples if you like, but people will be wondering, why have I come on your show to talk about tanking? Now, I don't want to be seen as an expert on tanking. I don't want countries like Canada, Ireland ringing me as a keynote speaker on tanking at these world conferences.
Well, they're all but listening.
When I was suspended in 2013, 2014, I was commentating for the ABC. I'm down at Hobart, you and Hamish, having breakfast down near the sailing club. I'm with Drew Morfitt, and Hamish came up and said, "Chris, don't hate me for what Gil did to you."
That's true.
You were there.
He said that he's actually had the same conversation with me over the last 12
months. I've had it with a few people.
Anyway, I said out loud to Gil yesterday, I certainly don't hate Gil. And look, people think I'm on the show because I took Gary Lyon off the streets of Cobram as a young player and helped him not become a problem child. But I'm really here for you, Hamish. So
okay.
You need to understand that. There's love, son.
Well, I'm feeling better already, Connors.
Well, what aside, you know, this time of year, Chris, and, yep. You know, this conversation comes up almost year on year about, sides are trying to tank, they don't want to win, they want to get the early draft picks. But there's so much more going on at club level and club land than that.
Absolutely. And look, it's the definition of tanking. Are you going to, if reducing your chances of winning this season to increase your chances of playing in the finals and winning a premiership next season, that can be viewed as tanking by some. I'll give you some examples, and I'm sure you've given them across the morning. Some of the things, this is what you've got to do. If you've got a player that needs surgery that's going to affect their preseason, get it done immediately. So they have a full preseason to increase their chances of being successful next year. If you've got a player between the ages of 20, particularly between the ages of 20 and 25, and you're not sure whether to keep them on the list, then play them in the seniors in positions where you can really have a judgment. Can they cut the mustard at the top level? You know there's some players that play pretty good at VFL, don't show enough to give you confidence at AFL, but then go up and become, you know, good AFL players. They just adjust to the environment well. If you've got players who need leadership responsibilities, put them in. Put McDonald on the ball. Put Sean Attlee on the ball. Take Zeeble and Cunnington out. See if Cunnington can play forward. When we had our situation, Mark Jamar was a struggling player. We played Carlton. We played him forward. He'd hardly kicked any goals in his career. He kicked 5 in that game. In years to come, went on to be an All-Australian ruckman. Now, did that play its part? I think it might have. People can debate it, but taking that risk would have reduced our chances of winning, you know, on the day. These are some of the examples that will reduce your chances of winning that are going to increase your chances of being successful next year. If people want to judge that as tanking this week, a bit like when, you know, Harves and Ross Lyon didn't take the team away because they had a final series coming up at home, sure. But at the end of the day, what's got to happen, Tim? Now, you've got to get your brother onto this, Hamish. Okay. We've got to get rid of this reverse draft. We've got to go back to a lottery because this thing is going to rear its head at this time of the year every season, and it's unfair on all the people at those clubs, particularly at this point in the moment, guys like Chris Fagan and Brad Scott.
I agree. I agree with all that. Yeah, and when you're sitting down at this time, you've been through it at Melbourne. Can you recall any time where you didn't put the same level of preparation and planning into those games at the weekend that you had at any other stage during the year because you didn't care about the result?
When you're down the bottom of the ladder, Tim, when you're going through tough times, you put in more work than ever before. I can guarantee you the coaching staffs at those bottom teams are putting in more hours than the ones up the top because the ones up the top are trying to have that freshness attached to the way they go about their business where the other ones down the bottom are really having an attention to detail in every aspect of their club. Now, our investigation went for 8.5 months, and there was no evidence that suggested anyone at the club tanked games. Now, I went on to be suspended for having conversations not in the best interest of the game. Now, and the conversations were around the things I just alluded to. Not having conversations in the best interest of the game, you guys should be suspended from the AFL on a weekly basis, listening to your show. But that's the way, and there was lots of learnings all the way through it. But the only way we're going to stop the talk, Tim,
yep.
This mightn't be good for your show, but the only way we're going to stop it is to stop the reverse draft and go to, and maybe you can ask your viewers, if we're going to get rid of this draft, what can we have in place? And other sports around the world have kind of different mechanisms in place to make this conversation go away because it's not good for the game. Imagine if Brisbane and North were playing in the last game of the season and the next Gary Ablett was first pick in the draft. I mean, wouldn't matter what the club said, wouldn't matter what you said on your show, everyone's going to say that time that game was tanked and those guys have got to carry that through their life. It's not right.
Yeah, and the pragmatic answer to that, if you're not invested in the two teams playing, is of course you want them to finish on the bottom because you want that access to that player. Hey, I've got to move on, Connells, because you can talk until finey tonight. I'm just looking at the Golden Valley Football League ladder at the moment. Kyabram on top, 14 wins, no losses. Shepparton United, your side, are in 10th spot, 14th, 3 wins and 11 losses. Are they going to merge with Shepparton?
No, but there is talk of an investigation happening in the Kyabram district, and there is new mechanisms in place, point systems, salary caps, all these things
hurry
to
open
up the competition. And that's affected Shepparton United, one of the greatest clubs in the history of country football, enormously. So we'll reshape and get back to winning all the premierships that we've done in the past.
Thank you for joining us this morning. I have to jump in here. Sorry, Hamish. And
what's
we need
happened?
To clear all commitments. Just clear all commitments and we...
We've got to apologise.
We're putting out a worldwide apology.
Okay, what happened?
So, one of our great producers out there has contacted Mike Brearley, former England captain, who's now would be, what, 70?
I think he's in his 70s, Mike, yeah.
For a comment about the Australian cricket and the impact it might have on the Ashes. And whilst he was doing that, the switchboard's going, it's flying
that's
today
right.
because we've got so much to talk about. So
Mike wasn't there. Our other producer left a message
that's right.
and he calls
that's
back.
Right. So our other producer starts answering, yes, Your name, please. Oh, it's Bill from Baronia. Righto, Bill, what do you want to talk about? Then he gets on and picks the next one. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, mate, talk up.
Hello,
I can't hear you, mate. You're going to have to talk up. What do you want?
Well, you rang me.
Mike Brown.
Come on.
You can't deal
unreserved apology from this radio station to Mike Brealey this morning.
You rang me. Yeah, no, sure we did,
and
mate.
The good thing
you're ringing for the quiz, Mike?
The good thing is we gave him a dozen Callaway golf balls.
And some Julius Marlowe's.
And a pair of Julius Marlowe's.
and a tie.
Sorry.
And we threw in a Bataki ham as well.
Sorry,
it's on
Mike.
Your way, Mike.
They're clearly trying to square up with Mike. we're very, very sorry about that.